WTFR.
We are sick and tired of the New York media dominating and controlling the news around the world. We are sick and tired of having to keep silent as the white genocide continues. Well, we're not remaining silent anymore. Scream from the fucking rooftops with Mike Sledge here on News White People Can Use, where truth and real news is called anti-Semitic.
Yes. Yes, let me get my radio voice ready here. Yes, you are listening to News White People Can Use. This is Mike Sledge on the one and only WTFR, where thought is free radio, and a special welcome to those listening on 1650 AM in Buffalo, New York, and 105.7 in the Aussie Alpines. And let me just warn everybody, this is going to be a power-packed broadcast because this is the special SS edition of News White People Can Use. Yes, the special SS edition of News White People Can Use, the Sean and Sledge edition. And I want to welcome to the broadcast right now the one and only Sean, a.k.a. Surplus. What's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing there, Mike? We've already got the Antifa trying to call in, but we won't get to them just yet. They can call in the second hour because we've just got to cover some shit here. There's been a lot of shit going on, as you know.
Yeah,
absolutely. The SS, I like that. You know, when I write an email back to people, I use the SS as Sean Surplus as my signature when I write back to people, and they're going like, SS, that sort of suits, doesn't it, when it comes to the Nazis and everything like that?
Yes. This is the SS edition. A lot to cover, and I can't wait in the second hour to talk to some of the anti-fags.
That'd be great. Yeah, right. Yeah, the anti-fags.
Yeah, anti-bag fags.
Yeah, right, the anti-bag fags. I love it. Yeah, you can guarantee that they're out there with their buddies right now. One of them is called Major Hicks, but he's actually known as Dirty Damon. And there's probably a reason he's called Dirty Damon, because he slaps his balls in some other bloke's face. Now, that might be fun to him, but that is why we call them the anti-fags and the anti-bags.
Yeah, the anti-bag fags.
That's brilliant. The anti-bag fags, yeah.
Hey, man, but a lot to cover in this first hour. I want to start out by talking with you about the piece you just put up that you did, Middle of the Road, which I thought was excellent. Listen to today. And yep. I thought you hit the nail right on the head. Right on the head. We're not zombies over here. You know, we're not like anti-fags or anti-bag fags. We have our own opinions, our own ideas, but we agree on, the basic future of where we want to go.
Yeah.
As white people, we can have our little disagreements and stuff, and that's what life is all about. And that's what makes for good radio and a good network, not for a bunch of brainwashed zombies like over there at Rent-A-Gay. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely, absolutely. You know, it is great radio when you can agree to disagree too. Like, for instance, I had a good laugh with you and Tabitha when Tabitha was recently on your show, or you were recently on Tabitha's show, because you've both been sort of back and forth. And I really had a good time with the idea that you said, you know, we're just going to piss Sean off. Because, he's not totally on board with this whole esoteric thing these days. And I thought to myself, you know what? That's good radio right there, where people can actually see that even when we do disagree with something, we can bring humor to the disagreement. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I was just basically joking around. You know how I like to.
Of course.
You know how we, you know, off air go back and forth and fuck with each other and that kind of thing. I mean, it's just all part of, you know, look.
It's something
this is what
that
life
it's
all
something
about,
that
you know?
It's something that the Antifa teabaggers can't do, and it's something that Ren Grenade cannot do. This is why so many people were fired from their fucked up network. It's because they can never come to that middle ground. It's always, hey, it's my way or the highway with them, which is we're yeah. able to sit there and say, all right, we have some differences. Yeah, no problem. Later on, we'll work that shit out. But in the meantime, let's just meet in the middle ground and get the task at hand done.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And it's about putting out content. Not this, I mean, yeah, for today, but as you said, this is content that's important that we put out against the enemy for really down the road as well, because, you know, this is like a time capsule. These broadcasts that we do are on the record forever. This is, you know, out in the ether, and this is, you know, people are going to look back, you know, in the near future and go, hey, this was the framework, the blueprint for how we really, the knowledge we need in defeating the enemy we face, you know?
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself. And as you and I were talking about during the week, people need to start downloading these shows. I mean, I know a lot of them do. People write to me all the time saying, I'm keeping a collection of every one of your shows, every one of Mike's shows. We've had the emails coming in about how brilliant it is that we've brought you back to the limelight, Mike, which I think is a fantastic thing, knowing that, well, that there's a lot of the old listeners from Oracle and Orion and all of those that did actually follow you. Even though you weren't on Orion, there were a lot of the listeners that came across to Orion that were actually saying, do you know where Mike Sledge is? And I was still learning who you were at that time. I didn't know exactly who you were until I got to Renegade. And then I learned later, okay, this guy's done a pretty good show. But people need to start downloading the shows more, because like you said during the week, these shows are going to go down in history. Someday there's going to come a time where our kids are going to say, you know what? These are the men that helped save white Western civilization. Okay, they might have been doing an adult show with bad language and everything, but they were still talking the facts. They were still speaking about the important things that would bring white Western civilization back to measure. And this
absolutely,
is...
Sean.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let me just say this about the language thing. You know, if people... If the Western world today, if the Western white civilization today is so sensitive that they can't handle words, they never will have the balls to do what they have to do when the time comes to really defeat the enemy. If you're offended by a goddamn word, how are you going to lay the sword to the root of the tree against the enemy when the time comes? If you're offended by language, how well are you going to do in an actual battle on the battlefield, which eventually it will come to that. And if you're offended by language and you scream, well, I can't handle the words, we've already fucking lost. It's already over. Forget about it.
I don't like the word fuck, Olive. And then all of a sudden you're going to walk out on the fucking field with a sword? Yeah, good luck with that one. You know?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, you know, if you're offended by words out there, if you're out there listening and you're offended by words and you're some kind of a self-hating white liberal or whatever, or Antifa who doesn't like language, it's the whole PC culture. You know, you're so afraid of language, you know, it's really sad, because if words can control you, then we are really in deep shit. And let me say, I grew up with this, Sean. It was sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Yeah.
That was the way I was raised.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, same here. It was the same thing as I was growing up, because you and I are in the same age group where men were, as we grew up from being boys into men, we were actually fucking men because of certain sayings like that. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. You know, and, you know, sometimes we went out there and broke fucking bones. You know, here, an idea I have, Mike, is that the Kikes, you know, they've always had their own encyclopedias, and there are a lot of those encyclopedias of what we've been learning about. in our schools when we were children. Now what we're doing, what you are doing, what Tabitha is doing, what Shield Maiden is doing, what other people on different networks, and I'm not talking about the cult network, I'm telling you, we're creating our own encyclopedias. So there's no doubt in my mind when Dr. William Pierce was actually saying that we have to leave a legacy behind for our white children, so that it won't remain this friggin' rape that comes from people like Barbara Lerner Spector and all of that. What happens if we've got to create our own encyclopedias through these broadcasts, and one day, you know, our kids are going to learn from what we said, and their kids are going to learn, and their kids, and kids all around the world. I've already had some of my sons' friends contact me and say, you know what, I absolutely love your show, because you're saying it as you see it, and every time I look into the things that you're seeing. So, mm-hmm. you know, at their age, and they're around like 17 and 18 years of age, for them to be saying that now, there's a promise coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I talk to a lot of younger people at the workplace and stuff, 19, 20 years old, 21. I'm going to tell you something. You know, a lot of these people bash the younger generations coming up, but I'm going to tell you something. From my experience, they are more hardcore, especially the young guys, are more hardcore than we ever were. And I'm going to tell you, the enemy better take note, because there is a huge storm coming against them in the next 20 years that they won't even fucking see coming. I guarantee you this.
Yep. The networks like Ren Grenade, they're going down. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if you take a look at what's going on over there at the moment, I was just talking to Tabitha today about a bloke had sent me an email showing me a description about how Tinia seems to think that chickens are really, really cognitive and that they shouldn't be killed and everything like this. And she's put this picture up with some little girl hugging her pet chicken, to make it, like, to soften people up. And I was laughing my ass off. You know, people are starting to see through all this vegan bullshit. They're starting to see through their shenanigans. People are getting strong again. You just take a look at all the comment sections. Again, as I was talking with Tabitha, you take a look at the comment sections, whether it be forums, whether it be YouTube, whatever. And a lot of the YouTube comment sections are being shut down. Like, they won't allow comments anymore. I wonder why. You know,
It's always a great sign when they ban the comments. That means we've taken over that particular comment section, and they don't want the information to get out, so they just ban the comments altogether. Like, a lot of, like, National Review, I think, got rid of a lot of their comment sections, because they were swarmed over the last 6-7 years with people on our side just bashing the fuck out of them, you know? So,
yeah,
it really is happening. I mean, the war, you know, I don't mean to be like Alex Jones, but there is an information war that's been going on for quite some time. I mean,
absolutely.
We know it's been going on since the late 90s, really, if you want to know the truth, and your experience with doing a podcast and radio going back to 2002, 2003, mine going back to 2009, we've seen this building up.
Yeah.
And the groundwork's already been laid, and now we're actually seeing the results of stuff that you and I were involved in 10, 15 years ago, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I was talking to Jimmy not long back, and one of the things he said, you know, Jimmy X, of course, and one of the things he said was, remember all of the things that we were talking about on Oracle, Sean? I said, yeah. And he said, have a look into it. It's come into fruition. We were warning people about it. No one wanted to hear it. You were a racist. You were an anti-Semite. You were an asshole. Whatever the crazy words were at the time. But now it's come into fruition. And then you have people like Bile and Tinia that want to sort of take credit for that, because they left Oracle. By the way, Bile hadn't even taken the Jewish clitoris chewing gum out of his mouth by the time he fucking started broadcasting, you know? So
yeah.
we were way ahead of our time, but no one wanted to listen. It was it's just crazy now when Jimmy and I sit down and we have a talk. And by the way, he's going to be joining you and I soon, Sledgy.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. He was always sort of hardcore in a well-mannered way, but now he's had enough, just like you and I, and he's just he's willing to just come out with the gloves on, or the gloves off.
Yeah,
rather.
And look, yeah, the gloves off. Yeah, and I got to say, you know, you're absolutely right. I can attest to what you're saying is absolutely true. I have people, family members, friends, that when I started doing podcasts and the radio a long time ago, when I was active way back even in the 90s when I was doing grassroots underground political stuff, I got to tell you, they all thought I was crazy. They laughed at me. A lot of them wouldn't want to be associated with me because they were in fear for their job, their livelihood, or being, you know, attacked by their community as being some kind of racist or whatever. Now, guess what? I'd say 90% of those people come to me now when I talk to them, and they go, "You know what? I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'd say 95% of what you said back then has already happened. You know, the tranny movement, you know, the radical homosexual shit, the war on language, the censorship, all of this that we warn people about, going back to the Oracle days, it is here. It is here. They've already done it. They've already done it. So, you know."
No, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's funny that Ren Grenade continuously try to call us so-called has-beens. But I reiterate this. It's funny that everybody's coming over to this network and going, "Hey, Sean, thanks for having Mike on. I used to listen to this dude years ago, and I just didn't know where to find him. All of a sudden, I've been typing in the search engine, and I found him, rah, rah, rah." There's literally a lot of people that have missed you, Mike. You know, I said to Tabitha today as well, I said, "Listen, we're gaining more of an audience than ever before, because now, you know, when you've got one host, you're going to serve one form of audience. But if you've got two hosts, you're going to serve another different audience. And then if you've got three hosts," and so on and so forth. And by the way, I won't say who it is yet. I'm going to leave it as a surprise. But we've got another two hosts that are going to be joining us after the new year, Mike, which will...
Wow.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. Yeah, I heard you say that on the Middle of the Road bit you put up. And I got to say, I can't wait. I can't wait to find out who these mystery people are. This is exciting. This is going to be a big deal for the new year for WTFR. I can't wait, man. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, so when they say that we're has-beens and everything, they really got nothing. It's just all about the fact that they are losing. They wouldn't be over in our comments section saying we're has-beens if there was something to it. You know, and we'll create a new mainstream someday soon. What's going to happen is all of these Fox News and CNBC and all of this other shit, it's going to be gone sooner or later. And I don't want to become mainstream that we see today. What I want to do is I want to create a mainstream. And as you were saying throughout the week, I want to create a mainstream that will continuously remind people of the hollow hoax and continuously remind people of the due control that they've got over us, the octopus tentacles that they've got over us. And I want to continuously remind of how they weaponized the niggers and everything like that. I really do. And that will be the new mainstream. It won't be of this political correctness that we're seeing here today.
Oh, yeah, Sean, you're absolutely right, because what we're seeing now is the decline of Fox News and CNN and ABC, NBC, and all these networks like we have in the United States. I don't know what you have down there, but, you know, the same thing, the mainstream news networks, the television is already dead. So what has happened in the last 5 years, right, since really 2015? You know, you had the fake alt-right type stuff come into play, which was another escape valve because the system knew that the television media was now dead. So they created this fake, you know, underground that seemed to be like they were using our language that we used to use back
Richard
in the past.
Richard Spencer and all of those little faggots.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So they created that because they knew they had to have something in place. Now that is falling apart. And this is a great thing because at the end of the day, I talk to people all the time that came out of this alt-right thing, that came out of that, And they're now coming back to what we're saying because that was their final media delusion. That was their final media delusion, was that whole movement. And when that goes, it is straight back to the raw, bare-knuckle truth. And that's where we're at now. And that's why this network is so important.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Look, people can complain about the bad language as much as they want, but they keep listening. They keep coming back. You know, we had 6,000 people that hit the website just 4 weeks back, maybe 5 weeks back now. We had 3,000 hits throughout the week, and I continuously hit Tabitha up about this so that people can know that I'm not bullshitting. Literally, we've got people coming over to us because they're sick of the shit. Even some of the people, Mike, in my personal life that have once or twice or maybe 1,000 times called me a racist and an anti-Semite are starting to look at me and go, Sean, you know what? I think you were right. And I go, I know I was right. I didn't just look into this stuff a long time ago. I was reading about the Rothschilds. I call them the Rothschilds because they're like one of those disgusting gone-off broths. But anyway, I've been talking about the Rothschilds since I was 17. This doesn't just come out of my ass. And then all of a sudden, the Rothschilds, and this sort of bolsters what you were saying earlier, Mike, is that, people come along and say, maybe you're right about what you say and everything. Well, all of a sudden, David D. Rothschild comes out during the Copenhagen talks and he says it's very hard to get this global governance agenda sort of activated. And I'm like, there we go, right there. Something I was talking about when I was 17, I'm 44 now, and I still have people contacting me and saying, Sean, I think you might have been right. And I'm going, you think?
Hey, I get the same thing. I get the same exact thing. It's like in just another measuring stick of how we are winning is the fact that a couple years ago I was doxxed at a place I was doing part-time work at, and this is funny. This lesbian black whatever the fuck this thing was found out about some of my old shows, and so she went to my boss and complained about me to get me fired. And guess what happened? He ended up listening to my old shows and thought they were hilarious, never even got rid of me. So even the doxing and that kind of shit doesn't even work anymore because a lot of people now are going, fuck you, you tranny, you fucking faggot. Get the hell out of here with your anti-fag shit. We don't give a fuck anymore, you know, because this country and our people are becoming more nationalistic. And that's a good thing because nationalism will eventually become white nationalism as this culture war increases and continues to become even more arrayed against us by the enemy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, we've just had a quick question come in through Skype from Josh, yeah. And he's actually asking if he can get into the chat via phone. I don't know, Josh, and for all the ladies and gentlemen out there, I'm not sure. I've never, ever had an app for chat and go, so I don't know how that would work. I can look into that for the future, but in the meantime, you can get into the chat room, ladies and gentlemen, by going to tctaunleashed.com. That's tctaunleashed.com, and join us there. You can also call in, but we'll be taking calls in the second hour. Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. That's a bit of a difficult one. I'm sure that I could probably create an app. I mean, I've coded most of the software that I use, and I've scripted most of the BAT files that I use for this network. So I'm sure I could probably cook something up like an app and then submit it to the smartphone tip, the smartphone. I fucking hate the smartphone, so I... Yeah.
Sean, I still have a fucking flip phone. I got rid of my iPhone and went back to the flip phone because I actually like it better.
The only... You know,
I don't care. I want the flip phone to be the new symbol of white nationalism. I've joked around about this before. That way we can recognize one another in public. We can just flip it out and people are laughing, but we're not laughing. It's like it's better than the OK symbol. We pull out a flip phone...
Right. You've got a point to that. The reason I like this smartphone, I've got to say, and I'm a sucker for it, is that you can just talk to it and you can say, what is the definition of this? And it goes, oh, this is the definition. And you go, holy shit, it fucking talks back. But on the same token, you know that someone's out there tracking and fucking tracing you on these things.
You know? Well, yeah, they're tracking. I agree. But, you know, I have a very good computer that I do all my stuff on the computer when I get home. But here's the thing. I dropped my iPhone at a bar one night and it broke. And, you know, so in the meantime, I went to the store the next day and got one of these cheap little fucking flip phones for like $15 a month. This is like about 6 months ago. And the funny thing is, I've never gotten around to getting another good phone. I said, fuck it. I'm paying $15 a month. I don't talk to anybody. I hate talking on the phone. I don't talk to anybody on it anyway. You know, so I think it's hilarious. And people go, oh my God, what's that? I said, it's a fucking flip phone, you asshole. I used to have an iPhone. I dropped it when I was at a pub drunk. And I said, fuck it. I don't care. I got this piece of shit for like a couple days, I thought. And a couple days turned into 6 months. I don't care anymore. I kind of like it once more.
Yeah, you know, you're going to have a laugh now. I didn't get my first cell phone. Like, you know, I had a home phone, you know, the one that was plugged into the wall. But I didn't get my first cell phone until 2012. And a friend of mine, she comes along and says, Sean, you finally bought yourself a cell phone. It was one of those flip phones. And I said, yeah. I said, I just don't know how to work the fucking thing. It won't work. She said, you haven't activated the SIM card. And I was like, oh, okay, because I knew nothing about it. I didn't look into it or anything like that. If I had looked into it, I would have known. But so she comes up and she puts the SIM card in it and she starts doing this and this and this. And then I'm like, oh, all right. So I can sort of walk around anywhere with this and use it. And she said, it's 2012, Sean. Have you, like, what the... fucking really? And I'm like, yeah, I've just never been fucking interested in the bastards. You know, back in the day, remember when we were kids, Mike, we'd be walking along without a phone because there was no such thing as a cell phone. Your phone stayed at home. So you're walking along the street and you got along with your mates and everything like that. You didn't have to worry about a cell phone. These days, you can't go past some young millennial without them sitting there typing on the phone to the point where they near on bump into you. You know what I do? I don't care if they're an adult and a millennial or whatever. If they're typing on their phone and they're walking towards me, I go, hey, look out. I'm coming through. And then they're sort of like, then they're sort of like, I mean, I'm sorry.
It's fucking crazy. It's like, you know, I bought my son an iPhone. I bought him this expensive computer. I spent like $1,200 on it. You know, I got him this this thing for, you know, another electronic gadget for Christmas. And, well, I just found out that one of my family members has got me a Christmas gift. It is a new, nice smartphone.
Oh, goody.
They're embarrassed of me because I have a flip phone. So they bought me. So I will have, I guess, that's one of my Christmas presents. They're embarrassed to be around me with the fucking flip phone now. But, you know, that's why I kept it. I love making everybody nervous and pissed off all the time, you know?
Yeah, you know what? There are some good things about the smartphone. But as long as you keep in mind that, yes, that it's a lot easier to track and trace you. You've got some applications, it directly asks you, well, can we tap into your location? And I'm like, fucking no. But you know they're still going to do it no matter what. But you know what? They're tracking and tracing us no matter where we are these days, Mike.
No matter what. Remember that girl that used to have, or excuse me, woman that used to have a show she did? I think she was on GCN for a while back when we were back in the Oracle days. I can't remember her name, but she would talk about RFID tracking and tracing and all that stuff, you know, and she was absolutely right on the money, but you know, they've got it RFID technology embedded in the clothing now that you buy at stores. I mean, track and trace stuff. It's gone to that level. I mean, you know, so, I mean, they're going to track you no matter what, you know what I'm saying? So, anyway, we'll be back on the other side. News what people can use. This is Mike Sledge with Sean, a.k.a. Surplus. Be right back.
Tommy goes to confession and tells the priest, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I have been with a loose woman." "Is that you, Tommy?" says the priest. "Aye, it is, Fire." "Who was it you were with, Tommy?" "I'd rather not say, Fire." "Was it Bridget?" "No, Fire." "Was it Carlene?" "No, Fire." "Was it Megan?" "No, Fire." "Well, Tommy, say 4 Our Fathers and 4 Hail Marys." When Tommy gets outside, his friend Pat asks him how it went. "Terrific," says Tommy. "I got 4 Our Fathers, 4 Hail Marys, and 3 great leads."
Welcome back, News White People Can Use. This is the dreaded by the enemy, the SS edition of News White People Can Use.
The dreaded SS.
The dreaded. It used to be the best part about watching the Hitler Channel on Sundays. You know, it was, they'd have all these documentaries, and it was always the dreaded SS. They always had to say it, the dreaded SS. So this is the dreaded SS, Sean and Sledge edition of News White People Can Use. And by the way, I don't mind them tracking me or following me around. I'm going to tell you why. I think it's actually funny because they have to be shitting their pants. The establishment, the Jewish establishment has to be shitting their pants, tracking and tracing and listening to everybody going, "Holy shit, they're growing. There's more of them. The dreaded SS."
The dreaded SS, you know, here's the thing. They get cocky. What they do, and they do this. This is why they've been kicked out of so many nations. You and I have discussed this before, of course. But they get kicked out of so many nations so many times because what they do is they start getting cocky and say, we can get away with anything. We own Hollywood. We own the media. We do this. We do that. Oy vey, we can get away with fucking everything. And then when they start getting cocky, all of a sudden people start waking up. And now the worst thing they've got to face at the moment, Mike, is this, that in the past, when the white people woke up in a single nation, so let's take America for starters, or not even Germany, right, as a good example.
Yeah.
And they got kicked out. Ivey, we got kicked out. Yeah, well, because you're a bunch of low-down degenerate fucks. So then what happens is they come back into another nation and they start doing the same sort of thing. And then all of a sudden, they're kicked out of that one as well. So here we go. It's happening again. But the biggest problem they're going to face now is that it's worldwide. It's white Western civilization wide, thanks to the internet. They, you know, they had the military industrial complex create the internet alongside NAFTA. And then all of a sudden, everybody uses the internet now, and now it's going to be a white Western civilization-wide thing because we're all getting together. Like, I would never have been able to speak to you unless I lived in America at one stage. But here we are, millions of miles away, per se, and we're talking about this. We're all coming together and saying, you know what? We're sick to death of these fucking kikes doing what they've been doing.
Oh, absolutely. The day of the rope is approaching, and they're going to be hung by their own technological rope.
And legally. And legally, because...
Yeah, legally. Yeah, legally. Yes, legally. Yeah, legally. Yeah. But it's so funny because they created this monstrosity. They're actually, you know, It's like I used to joke around back when they started the Patriot Act and, you know, all this different stuff, surveillance technology. And I heard all these libertarian type people going, we need to stop it, get rid of it. And I said, well, hold on. Maybe we can just leave it in place and then take power and then use all the shit they created against them.
Right? Yeah.
Payback's a bitch, isn't
Payback
it?
Payback is a bitch.
So, you know, take back power. Oh, thank you. Thanks, Jews. We already got the Patriot Act. We already have the ability to invade without search warrants. We already have the ability to round people up and put them in the camps. We already have – oh, thanks. You've already laid the groundwork for us. Thank you for doing all the hard work. And now we have the technological industry in Silicon Valley that you dominate and control. And now we're going to create a global worldwide awakening against you using your own technology, dummy.
Exactly. Yeah. They are their own downfall. They really are their own downfall. They basically put their funds into white people creating an infrastructure of some way, of something type of form. And then when they continuously create, create shit for the white people, all of a sudden the white people say, all right, now that's our infrastructure. You've funded us.
Yeah.
Thank you very fucking much. By the way, you even funded us into, as white people, being able to create new weapons. And guess what we're going to use across against you?
Yep, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. They're going to be, the day of the rope's approaching, and they're going to be hung with their own technological rope.
Yep, exactly.
That'd be a good cartoon for somebody to make. It's like one of these people hanging from like a computer cord, you know?
You're right. who's that dude that does those cartoons that are politically incorrect, and he got himself into some trouble at one stage? Joe someone? I can't remember. I thought it was Joe someone. But...
I can't remember.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, but he did some brilliant cartoons where he would do these politically incorrect cartoons to really show up what the kikes and the niggers and everything were doing. By the way, Mike, I got an email, and I thought it was Tinier at first, right? And it might have been. I still don't know to this day. But the question was asked, why do you keep stressing over the previous network? And I want to answer to this. I don't stress over it. I don't stress over it. And I want to get back to your RFID, the thing that you were talking about when it comes to the RFID too. But I don't stress over it. This is fun for people like Mike and I. Mike and I are able to just come up with shit off the top of our heads about what we really feel. It's not something we have to sit down and write a whole diatribe about to be able to speak about it. Although I did take notes for some of my thoughts this week, but you don't really, he and I don't sit around and just write down a whole shitload of notes. For him and I, all we have to do is recognize what Ren Grenade, bile and tinea, that disease between your toes, are doing. And we just, off the cuff, we just talk about it, and it comes out humorous. It's just the way it happens with us. So we don't stress about it. While they're over there, sitting there going, that fucking Sean, that fucking Mike, Ivy, right? We ain't we ain't stressing. We're actually over here having a good fucking laugh. It's entertainment
to us. Yeah, we're not bitter or anything. We could care less, really. We're just having a damn good time. I mean, I sleep well at night. I don't even think about these two fucks during the course of my day. I just like to, it's just fun just to poke at them, you know?
Absolutely. And you know what? It's, that's how we defeated them. You know, now that they've only got, you know, their sock puppet names and a few stragglers like Anthony Hobbit, there's, you know, it's because we were just natural about it. It was like, okay, this is what we recognize they were doing, and this is what we're going to talk about, sort of thing. So that's how they were defeated. They've really got nothing going from them. Like I said in the other broadcast, they really are a skeleton of what they once were, all because of that Mossad bitch.
Yeah, and I gotta say, another reason why we go after them so much is because, you know, it's also a warning to people of warning signs to look for in other platforms that may arise down the road if they're talking about the same type of issues that, you know, like veganism, or which is, by the way, is part of the UN agenda, by the way. Veganism
That's
actually
right.
is part of their environmental agenda. This is a UN program. You know, stuff like that. You know, it's a good way through comedy to kind of warn people, or maybe even to get people out of the cult that are already there that might hear them attacking us, and they go, well, let me see what the other side has to say, and they come over and listen to us, and they go, well, fuck, I'm in a damn cult. I need to get out, you know?
Yeah, well, so, you know, and you know what? Comedy and seriousness is what we both cover. I mean, I've heard you just on one of your last recent shows, and you got really serious in that last part of the hour, and so your comedy sort of captured me, and I was like laughing my ass off through most of the show, and then all of a sudden you got serious, and I thought, now that was a perfect time to get serious too. And that's what you need to do. You need to mix a bit of comedy with seriousness so that people do want to remain listening, and it does keep people in to listen, and they're happy to say, right, that made me laugh, but also there was a serious side to that. Jacko, that does Jacko's Lantern, he's not an easy man to convince. He's very intelligent, and he will sit down and he will listen and he will, you know, dissolve the, whole show just to sort of see what's going on. And for him to actually come across into the chat room there and say, that was really powerful what you just said, Mike, in the last part of the show, is really impressive. So, you know, we're not just attracting an audience, we're attracting an intelligent audience, and I expect that will remain the same. Our broadcast, whether it be from Tabitha to you, to me, and the two hosts that are coming after the new year, I'm sure we will all continue to attract an intelligent audience.
Absolutely. And I'm going to say, I think 2020 will be a huge year for this network, a huge fucking year. I think 2020 will be the year that we really go to the next level. You know what I mean? I really do believe that 100%. Because it's going to be a big time year. You know, anytime it's a presidential election year, you're going to have, especially in the United States, you're going to have more and more people tuning in to content like this, even though we really don't care about the fake, you know, left, white, Jewish bird of prey paradigm. You know, their wings are the same bird. We all know this. But still, a lot of people don't know this. I get emails too from listeners saying, you know, why do you still cover some political issues and stuff? I said, but here's why. Yes, you and I understand that it's all fake. It's like wrestling. It's like WWF shit. It's all fake. It's fake and gay shit. We understand that. But a lot of new people coming in, they don't know all this. That's why we have to stay repetitive on certain things. That's why when you do a radio broadcast, you have to keep hitting certain topics. Yes, all of us may know, but you never forget there are always new listeners coming in that you have to kind of, at the same time, bring up to the level we're at.
Wholeheartedly agree. One of the things I've always said is that radio is repetition. I remember when I was listening to Peter Shank back in 2000, and I think it was 2005, one of the things he first said is that as a radio broadcaster, it's better to be heard and not seen. That was one of the first lessons he taught me. And then later on, he said, radio is repetition. Always remember that, because you've got a new audience that is coming along, and he said, it's sort of like the loaded gun. Right? It's like the loaded gun. For instance, when your big brother teaches you how to use a gun, he says, you never face that at somebody. And I say, what about if it's unloaded? No, it doesn't matter. It's always loaded. Right? Same
right.
sort of theory here when it comes to radio. Okay, you know, the first lesson, it's better to be heard, not seen. And the second lesson is that radio is repetition. So always treat it as a loaded gun. There's people coming along every week, and there might not necessarily be a new audience coming every week, but you still treat it like that loaded gun just in case.
Absolutely. And another thing too, Sean, is this, that for those that want to do shows like we do and want to come into this movement and, you know, and broadcast and do podcast or whatever, another thing that they need to understand to the new beginner in this field is, at the end of the day, you must remember, I don't care how much content you have, how much groundbreaking new research you have, all that. That's great. That's great. But at the end of the day, you're doing a radio show. And if people are not entertained and you don't hook them into listening, your content will never reach their minds. They'll never get to your research or your content because they're fucking bored. At the end of the day, you have to keep them listening. That is the key. You got to keep them listening. You got to hook them in.
Yep. I remember the days back on Oracle. One of the things I actually learned from Oracle was this. I was talking to the engineer behind that, which was not Doug Owen. It was not Lee Rogers. The engineer, I won't use his name because he didn't like his name being said, and I respect mm-hmm. that. But the engineer behind the brains of Oracle, he said that you've got 5-minute listens, and you've got 15-minute listens, and then you've got listeners that will listen to the whole show. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, there's some people that will just tune in for a quick sec to hear what's going on, and then if they're not interested in that 5 minutes, they're gone, and they're not coming back. They might come back next week, but they're not coming back for that show. And then you've got the people, of course, that listen for 15 minutes, and if that's not entertaining enough for them, and so on and so forth. And then you've got people that listen to the whole show because they sit around in chat rooms all day, and that's all they can do. But if you can entertain a person, as we quite often do, Mike, they'll come back time and time and time again and say, you know what? Okay, they talk some serious shit sometimes, but by God, they make us laugh. You know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And another thing you do, Sean, that I think is very important, that kind of goes back to the Oracle days, is you have the break. You know, a lot of these podcasts, they go straight through with no breaks. I don't like that. I don't think that's a good platform, because the breaks are important not only for the listener to absorb the information that you're putting out, but also for the host of the broadcast, maybe during the break, to go, you know, I think I went on this topic a little too long, this rant too long. Let me refocus, come back fresh from the break, and hit something else. It's great for the listener and the broadcaster. I think the breaks are very important.
I do too. Yeah, yeah. What happens is sometimes it just gives me that moment of thought to be able to say, all right, where is that article I needed? Because I've spoken mm-hmm. about this. I'd go 15 minutes per segment. And that's because, number one, I need to take a piss when I'm drinking. Number two, I also like to just come back to my article list and be able to take a look and say, right, what's the most important thing I want to cover? Do I want to play this audio? Do I want to play that audio? It helps me really just, as you said, regain my thought. And I think that's, like you said, it's important. You know, you need to be able to just take a breather, go take a piss, just grab another beer, and then come back, look at your notes, and say, oh, that's what I'll touch on next.
I mean, no one wants to hear something like this going on and on. The Jews, the nigger, and this guy, the guy, hold on, let me find this, oh yeah, the right. Kai, the nigger, the,
Right, exactly. And I've heard that.
Take a break and come back.
No, you're absolutely right. I've heard that on so many networks where they don't have their breaks. So they're sitting there going, right? And I'm going, holy God. But also, speaking about changing thought, going back to your RFID chip thing there, Mike, there was a mate of mine from the Netherlands that recently wrote to me, and it wasn't Jasper, just to let the audience know. Jasper's like our mascot, and not just the mascot, but a good friend. And what happens is, but it was this other dude that I've been speaking to for a while now, probably about 3 months, and he said that they've been putting RFID not just in clothing but in dolls. And I said, why would they put RFID in dolls? And he dropped mm-hmm. this link off. I'll probably put it in the under the show I'll have to find it, but I'll have probably put it in the show after we're done. I said, why would they put it in dolls? And he said, because they want to know, you know, where these dolls are going left, right, and center. Like, it helps them apparently get feedback for statistics. And I'm thinking, how the fuck does that work? How the fuck would you, why would you put an RFID chip in so they can track and trace? See, I'm okay with them fucking with me because I'll fuck with them. But when they start fucking with my children, that's the end of the story, you know? So my little girl back in the day could have been carrying a doll around that had an RFID chip in it. But of course, she wasn't really a dolly girl, thank goodness. She had a few dolls, but nothing major. They were more homemade dolls. But she had a teddy bear collection. It makes me wonder just how many things we buy that they actually have RFID in that we've never been told about.
Think about what's scary about, Sean, what's scary about that is, just hit me, was by them wanting to put these trackers in little kids like girls' dolls or teddy bears and stuff. You know, we already know that these bastards run the white slavery, sex trafficking, and the child porno rings all over globally.
Oh,
we
yeah!
It comes out of Tel Aviv. Now they could track the children, find out where they are to maybe kidnap and put them into these sex trades.
I did not even fucking think about that. I did not even fucking think about that. All I could think about was, because when I hear this sort of shit, I go into a rage. All I could think about was, why? Why would they fucking do this? Now, I went through a couple of small dolls that my daughter had. Like, most of them were homemade. There was a couple that weren't. I went sort of through the dolls just to take a look. There didn't seem to be any chips in them. But they've got tricky fucking shit that they're fucking doing now. And you've got to ask, that's a good point. They could actually traffic, like, kids through that shit. Yeah, fuck.
Absolutely. And that gets us back to a topic that I covered going back to the Oracle days. It was called, this was one of the weirdest stories I've ever covered. It's on this topic, Sean. It was called the Chip Program, and it was through the Kike Masonic Lodges, okay? This is not a lie, folks. You can look it up. They used to go outside of Walmarts here in the United States to try to get people shopping there to enroll their kids in a microchip program to so-called protect them against child abductions, okay? And this was actually done by the Scottish Rite Kike Freemasons at, like, Walmarts and stuff. No joke, working in tandem with law enforcement. You can look this up. CHIP program, C period, H period. It was called Child Human Something Program, whatever, but it was like the acronym for CHIP. True story. I covered this, and it was mind-boggling, or as Tabitha would say, mind-zoggling. It's fucking real, folks.
It scares the shit out of you. You know, my little girl was almost kidnapped when she was young. What happens is her and her brother jumped off a bus, and this bloke walked up behind her and grabbed her. And when his gun fell out of the bag, as he bent down to grab her, he panicked. And my son looked up at him and was like, what the hell? And he took off. And I get this phone call from their mother saying, Sean, you know, Beth was almost kidnapped. This bloke grabbed her today. So me and a few of my friends that are really kind of interesting, these particular friends that I hang out with, let's just put it this way. If we found the bloke that did it, he'd be worse for wear. I'll leave it at that. Yeah. And what happens is, put it this way, they're bikers. And bikers do not appreciate that shit.
Oh, I know that. I have a biker in my family, Sean, and he used to tell me all the time, if you have anything go wrong with certain this and that, I'm a problem solver. And he knew some rough fucking guys, but they were cool guys, but you don't fuck with them.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You know what? These bikers see me like family. They see like my daughter and my son like family. And what happens is we went for a bit of a drive to search to see if this guy was on the street after my son gave me a description. My little girl, she didn't sort of know what was going on. This shows how degenerate this fucking world is now. My little girl, she didn't even sort of know what was going on. When I walked in the door, she just jumped into my arms. Hi, Dad. Hi, Dad. And I went, hi, darling. How you doing? And she said, I'm okay. And I said, I looked at her mother and I said, what happened? And she started explaining it. And my daughter was sort of looking at me and just sort of like grinning. And I went, darling, I've got to explain something to you. Now, of course, you can't say to a little girl what this bloke probably had in mind for her. So I explained it the best way I knew how as a dad. And I just said, listen, sweetheart. I said, you know when you fall over and you skin your knee? And she said, yeah. I said, well, he was going to hurt you 10 times more than that. Now, of course, you can't explain why. But I said, she was only probably six. And I said, he was going to hurt you 10 times more than that. He was going to skin your knee 10 times. And that's when she sort of went, oh. I said, the next time something like this happens, you scream at the top of your lungs and you run to the nearest house. And you keep screaming. And if he happens to get hold of you, you stick your fingers in his eyeballs. I know it sounds gross, but you've got to stick your fingers in mm-hmm. his eyeballs. In every yep. way, shape, and form, sweetheart. As long as you don't know him, you continuously do it until he lets you go. And she went, okay, Dad, this scares the fuck out of me. You know, like...
Yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, getting back to the upside and downside of technology, this is one good use, believe it or not, of younger kids having a cell phone. If they know how to use it properly, they can call you real fast and you can get a location on them. That's yeah. one good thing about that I would actually say that we have today that we didn't have back then. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I do.
But,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, no, upsides, I do.
And there's always ups and downs with anything.
Exactly. I was just about to say that you know, it's got its ups and downs. You've got assholes, in the Zog that are going to try and track and trace you. But on the same token, it does have its benefits. Like for here in Australia, as you know, Mike, we've got, snakes that will kill you and they will kill you pretty quick. If you get bitten by a brown snake or a tiger snake, you're in deep trouble. You better know how to wrap that leg up and hope to God that you can get an ambulance up here in the Alpines real quick. So when you've got one of those phones, that is a benefit. You can call up real quick and say, my location is this. I've shared the location on the phone. Come and get me. You know, but
Yeah, I was going to say the snake thing you just brought up is actually another good example of how these vegan radical environmentalists, these Jew World Order vegan environmentalists, we love nature. We love nature. I love nature too, but nature can fucking kill you.
Yeah.
We will be back on the other side. Newsrock people can use this as my pledge with Sean Surplus, the one and only, right here on WTFR. Be right back.
Haven't you heard of La Happy Merchant?
La Happy Merchant?
Yes, La Happy Merchant.
La Happy Merchant.
Yes, La Happy Merchant. The one with the really big hook nose. The one that runs around with the banking dynasties under the false title known as the Federal Reserve Bank. La Happy Merchant. The same La Happy Merchant that was once known as the goldsmith that invented the corrupt idea of fractional reserve banking.
La Happy Merchant. Lead me to this La Happy Merchant so that we can make him not so happy.
WTFR.
Yeah. AC/DC, Highway to Hell. I can tell you something funny about that song. When I was a young kid skateboarding to that song back in the day, he goes, I used to think the lyrics were, "Life ain't easy, life ain't free. I saw a nigga on a one-way ride."
it's like that song, Mike, that you know, there was a place called Detroit, but now it's a disgrace.
Yeah. I used to have this book, Sean, of like all these songs where people thought they were saying something else, you know, in the rock world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was pretty good. It was one of those books you keep on the toilet for when you take a dump, you know?
You know, a mate of mine, you actually know who he is, but I'm not going to say it. What happens is I walked in and he goes, "Hey, do you need toilet roll?" And I went, "Not really. I buy my own toilet roll, thank you." But he throws this toilet roll up at me, and it's got Trump all over it. And I was like, yeah. And you know what? I thought Trump had a few good ideas here and there. At least he actually said, "Let's stop the immigrants." But he's still holding hands with Israel. So I said, "I might actually take that home."
Yeah. We need to get a like Star of David toilet paper or something.
Yeah, like, I don't know. You know what? I wouldn't even start. I wouldn't even stain my asshole with the Star of David.
Yeah, right. You're right. Yeah. That would be gay.
You know, the idea of Barbara Luna's specter up my ass really sucks.
Yeah, that's bad. Or yeah. BB Netanyahu.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. But, yeah, man, it's getting back to where we were talking about before the break. You know, there's the ups and downs to everything, and but you know, here's what I found interesting. I wanted to get to, and it goes to what you were talking to me the other day about. You know, you said you didn't vote in Australia, and you couldn't get your driver's license because you didn't vote.
Yeah, that's right.
In the States, they have the opposite thing. You get a driver's license, and you automatically can vote because they're sending all the illegals in. It was called the Motor Voter Bill. They're sending all the illegals. They're flooding us with all these illegals from the third world. And they have fake social security cards. They get fake driver's license or like real driver's license, but with like fake identity. And then they vote illegally. So it's the absolute opposite of what you have in Australia. I thought it was interesting when you told me that.
Yeah, it really sucked because it's what they did is I went into you know, where you sit the test for the license. I went into there and I sat down and I said, "Oh, I'm here to get my license." And they asked my name, my full name and address and all of that, and I gave it to them. And they said, "We're sorry, we can't let you sit the test." They didn't even let me sit the test, Mike. They said, "There's a number you have to call." And they gave me this little card with a number on it. And I called it up, and there was an elderly gentleman. He was quite nice about it. He actually tried to help me out. But what happens is he said, "No, what happens, the reason you can't sit for your license, Sean, is because you haven't voted and you've been fined for it, which has put you on a blacklist." And I went, And this was back in 2014, I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was 2014. I said, are you joking? We're in white Western civilization, 2014, and I'm not able to get my license. And he said, yeah, it does suck. He goes, I'm going to give you a temporary window. I said, what does that mean? He goes, I'm going to allow you to sit the test. I'm going to clear it so you can go and sit the test. But somebody stood over him in the last minute and didn't allow me to sit the test. And I hope the old fella didn't get fired for trying to let me sit the test. But that's how bad the world... And this was back in 2014. And 2019, it's only... Apparently, the law has changed. I have not looked into it. I'm going to be because I want to get my license for the captain, you know, to be able to drive him around. But,
It is so bizarre because not voting is voting. It's a vote of no fucking confidence.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
Yep.
It's a vote of no confidence. To not vote or to abstain from voting, you're still voting. You're saying that you don't approve of either of any of the candidates of either party, of any of the political structures that you have in your country. Non-voting is a vote, goddamn it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a vote of no confidence. Exactly. You have confidence in no party. You know, that in itself is a vote. Oh, it's just disgusting that it's mandatory here. You know, that in itself is communism, Mike.
Yeah. Well, it's worse than that. It's Jewish dictatorship is what it is. It's a goddamn Jewish dictatorship. It's not even communism at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's disgusting. Yeah. So you and I obviously have the opposites. So your immigrants, you're telling me, as long as they get their license, they then have the ability to vote.
Yeah, they're automatically registered to vote if they have a driver's license in like many states in the country. So they come in, and it's easy to get a driver's license if you're illegal. It's very easy to do because all of them have fake social security cards, all this shit. They come in, they get a driver's license. Now they're on the voter roll. Boom, they're voting. You see,
good God.
This was actually put into effect by Clinton back in the 90s. It was called the motor voter. So yeah, it's the opposite.
Oh yeah.
It's
yeah.
Unbelievable.
And I remember Dr. William Pierce had a real hate on for the Clinton government.
Oh yeah.
By God. I run him through our rotation. By the way, I've actually found a schedule for your rotation. I'll get to that pretty soon so everybody knows where they can listen to your repeats. But in the meantime, you had some audio that you wanted played. I want to get to that before the show finishes. And I especially want to get to the number one song that I love that you sent me that I'd never heard, if you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. This is this goes out to our audience. You will love this.
Life is like a nigger here in Old Nicks. I hate fucking niggers. Niggers suck dick. They're all poor like Obama. Fuck Michelle Obama. Niggers, I hate them. They are stupid and they can't do taxes. So dumb, and they are also poor niggers. Look at niggers, they're trying to raise money, but they can't because they spend all their money. They're niggers, and they're so fucking niggers. I hate them. Niggers and niggers don't know how to do anything without chicken. Niggers like watermelon and chicken. Niggers. Niggers are so stupid, and they're niggers.
Niggity niggers.
And at the end, he's like, niggers! That song, when you sent me that clip, I did not know what to expect. So when I pressed play, I was just like, seriously, Snoopy was looking at me as if, you're a dickhead. Why are you on the floor laughing?
I love that clip. Oh, God, I love awesome. That. I love that little clip.
Absolutely
awesome. I laugh. I never quit laughing. Every time I hear it, it's the best. And I send it to other people, and they go, oh, my God, this is the funniest shit. And that whole channel, there's a whole channel on BitChute where I got that from, which is called Black Crimes Matter. It's a great channel on BitChute.
Yeah.
It has a lot of funny stuff on there, like the Darwin Awards. Hilarious. Had this one clip of this black guy trying to get a screw out of the door handle with an electric screwdriver, and he was turning it manually. He got a fucking electric screwdriver in his hand, and he's turning the fucking thing manual. It's not even plugged in.
There was one similar on YouTube as well. On YouTube, there was a file with probably, I think it was something like 20 dickhead things that blacks do. Like, you know, when they've just come across from the fucking Amazon or wherever it is they come from, he's standing there. And he started working in a hotel, and he's knocking on the elevator door. He thinks it's the fucking door to the, like...
Oh, yeah, you sent me that. It's fucking hilarious.
It's hilarious.
And they think they're going through the fucking roof, right?
Right, yeah. And I'm looking at this shit, and I'm thinking, come on, people can't be that stupid. But yes.
Oh, yeah, they can.
They
I mean, they actually thought it was like the final scene to Willy Wonka and the fucking chocolate factory. Yeah. Oh, the more I think about it, it was a bunch of blacks in the elevator. It was the chocolate factory going through the roof.
I couldn't believe it. This, like, seriously, all you've got to see it, ladies and gentlemen. There's around 20 of these clips that show how dumb these fuckers are. It's just not. It's just. I've got a message coming in there. I'll ignore that until later. But yeah. Yeah, you can't make this shit up, you know. Hey, Mike, before we get to another one of your audio clips, do you mind me bringing this up? One of the things that I'm really horrified about these days is that I've come across kids that don't know where an egg comes from, and they don't know where a dead chicken comes from. When they eat chicken, they just think it's food. But their parents these days are so fucking stupid, it's not funny, that they don't explain it to them. Now, my little girl was a victim to this, by the way, because she's predominantly brought up by the other side. What happens is I would have thought that they would have been educating her with this stuff, so I didn't think to educate her myself. So that probably makes me a bit stupid as well. I'm happy to admit that. But I just thought that, you know, because she's predominantly with them, surely she'd know where an egg comes from. And there's a funny side to it, but a non-funny side to it as well. The non-funny side is parents need to do their fucking job and educate their fucking kids onto what things are. Like, a chicken that you eat is obviously a dead animal, and an egg comes from their bottom. So her and I, we've always loved eggs. Her and I, she'll have six boiled eggs in one sitting, and so will I. And we'll just be sitting
That's what I had today for freaking dinner, Sean. I had three boiled eggs and a freaking orange.
There we go. And what happens is, all three of us, my son, my daughter, and myself, are sitting there eating boiled eggs. And I didn't realize she hadn't finished eating yet. So I'm sitting there, and we're talking about, like, how my son's saying, like, you know, when you think about it, Dad, there's a lot of food that come from gross places. And I went, yeah, well, you take a look at what we just ate. We just ate boiled eggs, and that came from a chicken's ass. And my daughter all of a sudden turns around and looks me right in the eye, Mike. And she's mid-bite into this boiled egg. And she goes, she pulls the egg out of her mouth. She goes, what? It comes out of the chicken's bum. And I went, I'm sorry, darling. I didn't realize you were still eating. And I thought she'd know by now, you know. And she spat it out, and she didn't eat eggs for 6 months. What shits me, you know, if I was the predominant parent looking after my son and my daughter, I would have explained this sort of thing to them by now.
Right.
It just sucks that there's parents out there to this day, especially in the cities, that don't want to explain to, or just don't even think to explain to their kids that, yes, eggs come from a chicken's bum, a butthole, and chicken that is on the supermarket shelf is actually a dead animal. They really need to start educating these kids.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, though, Sean, if you really want to scare a kid from not eating chicken anymore, show them a clip of the rabbis in Brooklyn swinging the goddamn things around their head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Not wrong. I fucking seen that at one stage. And they sacrifice how many chickens per year for their...
For their sins. They put their sins into the chicken and they sell them to the goy to eat so that the goy can eat their sins. God almighty.
It's so in our face, and yet people don't want to admit it. You know?
Yeah, it's right in our face. I mean, it's like, but God, I'm telling you, man, I actually killed a chicken with my bare hands one time. You know, you can wring its neck. I had a friend that lived out on the farm, and he raised chickens, and he goes, here's how you do it. You pick it up by the head, flip it around, crank it around like a crank.
Jeez.
And they're dead, man. They're fucking dead. And then you get the chicken, you dip it in hot water, boiling hot water, scalding water to get the feathers off.
The feathers off,
Then you take the innards out. Yep.
I really
hate... I'm going to tell you something. A fresh chicken tastes so much better than that shit you buy at the grocery store.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah. And even the eggs. If you've got your own chickens and you get eggs and you pick up the eggs daily, they taste so much better than the shit that you get in the cartons. I, unfortunately, a lot of the time have to buy cartons here, but I do occasionally get farm eggs. But by God, you can taste the difference.
Oh, yeah, you can taste a huge difference. And here's the thing. You don't have to refrigerate. There's no refrigeration needed for the fresh egg that you get from a farm because they're not pasteurized.
That's right.
They're not radiated.
They can last for months, literally months. I've actually had them where they've lasted for months, and I have not had an off egg when they're fresh.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, back in the day, people on the farms used to have them sitting on the table, on their dining table, just in a basket, and they would just grab them from there and then cook them or whatever. They weren't even in the refrigerator.
Not to mention, with the fresh eggs, before they molested our chickens and everything like that with certain vaccines, because, yeah, even chickens get vaccines, ladies and gentlemen, depending on the farm or the...
steroids.
Steroids. Before that, there was no such thing as salmonella, where you could literally drink the eggs raw and you would be fine. These days, very few and far between.
Yeah, that used to be one of the best protein shakes in the morning, just a raw egg, beat it up, and drink it straight out of a glass.
That's right. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
It was like the ultimate workout deal, you know, back in the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Isn't it funny how everything's... You know, one of the things I said, I don't know how much you know about Michael Dazarian. Him and I don't necessarily get along. He's a bit of an arrogant cunt, so I tend to have a bit of a beef with him. But other than that, some of his knowledge was pretty cool. And one of the things I said to him when he still had his forum open, I said... Michael, why is it that we sort of perceive time getting faster as we get older? And he made a really good point. Because, Sean, when things start going downhill, they speed up. And I thought, that's how it fucking feels, actually. You know, with everything that's going downhill, it's like everything's getting faster and faster. Now, of course, I'm being partly facetious there, but still, I understand where he was coming from with his point, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like, you know, and it seems like the older you get, I don't know if you feel this way, but the older I get, it seems like just everything just is moving so much more rapidly. The days go by faster. The years go by faster. It's really weird. The older you get, I mean, it just seems like time moves by differently the
older
you get.
It's true. I remember my sister, my eldest sister, saying to me, Sean, you know, and she was still young herself. She was probably, I don't know, I think she was 26 or something like that. And she said, wait until you reach 21. Life starts to go by really quickly. But since I've reached 40, it's almost like,
oh God,
everything's just going. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, it's really going quick.
Yeah, it's really going quick, man.
Yeah. So we're going to have to make perfectly sure we make it legal to legally hang communists before we die, Mike.
Well, I want to see that happen. I want to see this happen before I die. I want it to be legal.
Same.
You know, it used to be legal not too long ago, you know, in the South where I live. They used to have, like, carnivals and fairs where they would take these rapists and child molesters and murderers and stuff, and they would take them to the town square. Most of them groids, by the way.
Yeah.
If you catch my drift, yeah. They were degenerate groids. And the white families would show up. They'd have, like they had food carts and cotton candy and candied apples, and they'd hang these people. And it was like family fun. It was real family values.
And rightfully so, because when you think about it, right, I know we're sort of laughing at it, but the thing is, rightfully so, when you think about it, what's not better than a family day out to watch a rapist or a kitty diddler get fucking hung? I'd be more than happy to be there with the cotton candy and tomatoes in my hand so I can throw it at them as they're going by and, oh, shit, yeah, you know? What's not a better idea? Hey, I want to play a clip for you if it's okay, Mike.
Sure.
Because this is
absolutely.
This is your show. The thing is, this is from Rabbi Yaron Reuven, and I'm trying to remember who actually sent me this, where he's actually talking about, I think it might have been Jacko in the, no, I can't remember. Anyway, somebody, it was in the chat room, I think. What happens is this Rabbi Yaron Reuven speaks about how, and he's a rabbi, he's a Jew, but he speaks mm-hmm. about how the Jews are cretins. Now, but there's something, there's a twist to it that I want to speak about after it finishes. Have a listen to this.
Who knows the first two laws that Hitler implemented? Hitler, Yimach Shemo V'zichro. First two laws that Hitler implemented that not only put him in a different status than everybody else for the rest of history, but also made what's called until this day the biggest financial miracle in history. Who knows the first two laws? Before the Nuremberg laws. Before that, we're talking about years before it. Hitler first comes into power. What's the first two laws? Okay, I'll save you the time. Rule number one, no more pornography, no more homosexuality, none of that garbage, not allowed. Berlin in the 30s, in the 20s, was the Sodom and Gomorrah of the day. They were the Las Vegas of the day. They were the Sodom and Gomorrah of the day. Homosexuality, pornography, all the bestiality, all the garbage of the world, that was the capital of the world. He outlawed it, you're no longer allowed, closed all the bars, all the gay clubs, all the production, which were all run by Jewish people, unfortunately. Second rule. What's the second rule? Second rule was, you're not allowed to charge interest. No more interest. Now you would think, why? What does he care about interest? Well, because all the people that had the money, that lent the money out, were Jews. He didn't like it. So he said no more interest. Why? Because of the high interest that the Jews charged people was so high, it ruined, it destroyed the economy in Germany. They destroyed, just like they destroyed Russia a few years before that through their communism over there. Jews destroyed Russia, not Goyim. Jews destroyed. Communism is by Jews. Well, don't let anybody confuse you. You look at history, Karl Marx, all the other Reshaim, they're all Jews. Wicked, but nonetheless Jews. They destroyed Russia, and he wrote in chapter 2 of Mein Kampf, they destroyed Russia, now they're destroying Germany, that's why I have to destroy them. Now, this doesn't make he's right, point is, that's actually real true history. Now, he saw that the Jews are controlling the financial system and they're charging such high interest, they destroyed the German economy.
Now, on surface value, you would think, hey, mm-hmm. this is a rabbi that knows what he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
But
uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. What this is about is that they know they're having their asses handed to them now because people are waking up. So they've got to have some of their rabbis come out and start acting like,
yes.
Oh, see, we're on your side, and Hitler was right, rah, yes, rah, rah. And then we get confused as to what Jew is good, what Jew is bad, and then we have to line them up and say, are you a good Jew, right, or are you a bad Jew, Mr. Sheffield? Right? So then, yep, we're all confused. I always say this, when you have one of these cretins come along, like this Rabbi Yaron Reuven, acting like he's one of our friends, tell him to go fuck himself and let him know that when it becomes legal, short drop and a sudden stop. Plain and simply.
Let me tell you.
I don't fall,
Sean,
for this shit.
This is what, Sean, this is what I call the Michael Wiener Savage Doctrine.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Okay, because here's what they do. It's another Jew. They pretend like, because he's now talking about how white nationalism is not really a bad thing and that we're strong people and we're going to take America back. He's been saying this on the shows. I listen to a lot of different talk radio shows to see what's going on,
yeah,
just to get a feel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, this is what I call the Michael Wiener Savage Doctrine. The Jews always do this. As their ship is sinking, remember, they have to control every side of the political process. That's what the alt-right was all about, by the way. It was allowing Jewish power to control a white nationalism. It was their,
yeah, yeah. Well,
to do
have
that.
A look. That's at what, that fucking Milo. That Milo, yeah, fucking piece of,
yeah,
shit,
yeah,
that said he loves taking black cock up the ass. Like, that was,
yeah,
a,
yeah,
and he's a Jew. That was all, yeah, about him saying, oh, I'm a part of the alt-right and everything like that. So it perverted the actual white nationalism.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what they do. But also, they embed things. Like, for instance, they make it feel like when they're talking, like in the clip you just played, he goes, it was like Sodom and Gomorrah. It was like Las Vegas. Okay. Now, see what he did there? Yeah, Las Vegas is a shitty place. I agree. But here's the problem. Everybody knows that the most degeneracy in the world, the capital of faggotry and degeneracy, is Tel Aviv, Israel. Okay. But no, what does he do? He protects the Jews and protects Israel and his community by coming out, acting like he's on our side, you know, against degeneracy, and then attacks Western civilization as being the home of the most degeneracy once again. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is what they do over and over again. They're very clever. They're very clever, Sean.
But
they're
we're
very clever.
We are fucking smarter than them. I mean, we can sit here and dissect these things as we just have. And know exactly, yeah, what they're up to. And this is why we're here. Because for the people that are new to this, I'm not calling them unintelligent. I'm just, because we were not all of, at one stage, all of us, including yourself, Mike, myself.
Absolutely.
Were not savvy to this at one stage. It took us some years to get to know this. But the reason we're here is to speed things up a bit and get people to know what these motherfuckers have been doing for a long time so that they don't have to, I guess you could say, be left behind. These people don't have to be left behind. The audience don't have to be left behind. Just, you know, it's so in your face now, though, that even the millennials are getting it. It's just amazing. We're about to come up to another break, I think, aren't we?
Yeah,
Jesus,
yeah,
Christ.
We'll come to a break in a second, but I got to say, that clip you played is so important because it summarizes... It summarizes, you know, this is their blueprint of deception. This is what they always do. They embed the left, the right, the white nationalists. It doesn't matter. They're involved in everything.
Yeah.
You know, a young Jewish kid when he grows up is trained, especially a young Jewish boy, is trained at a very early age to be an activist. It's part of their growing up Jewish. Activism is very important to entering for a Jewish boy to enter into manhood. They push Jewish boys to be activists and to be involved in politics at their bar mitzvah. And from that point, they push them to be activists through their college years and then get a profession to make a lot of money and so on and so forth. And maybe down the road, they can send them into politics or whatever. This is how they're trained. But they're also trained through the Talmud and Jewish black magic,
oh, yeah,
on how to deceive through language.
Kabbalah
language
mysticism
so
and all of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the break. Pick it up on the other side. So if people can... It's
And you're always there. The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. Albert Camus. Albert Camus was a journalist, editor and editorialist, playwright and director, novelist and author of short stories, political essayist and activist, and arguably, although he came to deny it, a philosopher. He ignored or opposed systemic philosophy, had little faith in rationalism, asserted rather than argued many of his main ideas, presented others in metaphors, was preoccupied with immediate and personal experience, and brooded over such questions as the meaning of life in the face of death.
We're in trouble all the time. You read about us all in the papers. We walk around and bump into walls. A blind delegation. Yeah. And we ain't afraid of high power. We're bulletproof. And we never hide the Eisenhower. This will follow justice and truth. We're the Department of
Oy vey, welcome back. Welcome back. I'm a good Jew. I love white nationalism. I love Hitler, Elmos Shamash, as we used to call him.
Sieg Heil.
You're listening to the dreaded SS edition. Ugh, I'm feeling verklempt over here. This is the Sean and Sledge edition of news white people can use. And remember, there's always some good Jews. Oy!
this, you know, I've always done that whole joke, as anyone will tell you, Mike, where I get sick to death of people saying that it's not all Jews. So I do that whole, it's not all Jews. That... But yet, I've never met a fucking trustable Jew. So, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm so glad you played that clip, because that right there really summer. And this is what they're doing more and more. This is the key. And this is a good sign for us, because it means they are losing the media war. This is the key. See, when they used to only have three channels on TV, that you had bunny ears, you had to tune it in by hand and all this shit, that was their glory days. You know, they had no competition.
That's right.
You know, when the newspaper, like where I live, it's the Atlanta Journal and Constitution, the Atlanta Journal and Constitution. And I got to tell you, when they used to deliver that before internet, they were the kings in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Now these people can't even make enough money to pay their rent because no one reads their fucking Jew rag anymore. You know what I mean?
Yep.
They're losing.
It was a big mistake.
They're losing the media war, Sean.
It was a big mistake on their behalf. They funded the, like I said, the military industrial complex and NAFTA to create the internet for themselves at first. And then they thought, we can make some money. Ugh. Right? We can make some money off the goyim by selling the internet to them. And then it was a big mistake. Now, then, like I said, they're not going to just have their asses handed to them by one nation. All of white Western civilization is coming together again. Now, it's taking some time, but by God, it's taking less time than what it took for the Kikes to push the Babylonian Talmud, the idealism of the Babylonian Talmud, and also the learned elders of the Dead Sea Scrolls onto white people. It's taking a lot less time because we've got the internet. They made a big fucking mistake.
Oh, yeah. And this is why I always tell people, you know, it's not a bad, you know, this is why Hitler, you know, originally supported Madagascar as being Israel. But he has supported some place to send them.
Yeah.
Because he envisioned, he envisioned the Reich winning and it becoming a global phenomenon and him having the all of Western civilization agreeing with him. That's what he envisioned, you see, in the beginning, because he knew that, you know, there were people in America like Lindbergh and Henry Ford that didn't like him, and there are a lot of people in government here that didn't like him. So he envisioned this for them to have a place where they would be forced to go when they were expelled from all of Western civilization, and they would be forced to live in their own nation state where they would have to rip off each other, which is against their own religion, you see. This would be the ultimate hell for them, not having anyone else to leech off of except themselves. And then, oh, we know where they're at. They're in a single place. We can keep an eye on them.
They would have sucked themselves dry. Literally, they would have they would have had to leech off.
No pun intended.
But Henry Ford, he knew very well what they were about. He was very well versed on the Kike, and he got slandered for it. And there was even, what was the chess player, Bobby Fischer. Bobby Fischer was a Kike himself, and he actually called them out and said, you know what? Our people are nothing but leeches and disgusting people. Now, given that he was
By the way, he was forced by the intelligence agencies out of America, by the way.
He had to exile.
In like Norway or something.
Yeah, he had to exile. And he disappeared for almost 20 years. Now, I'm a chess player. I actually made it to the Australian Championships, I'm happy to say. I lost to a kid with his teddy bear, which really sucked. He was brilliant. He was really brilliant. He was from the UK, and he had been traveling. I mean, now he'd probably be about 30 years old. But the thing is, he'd been traveling all around the world playing chess. He was one of those child prodigies when it comes to chess. Anyway, what happens is I was a fond chess player and made it to the championship, so I had a fond heart for Bobby Fischer, and then I found out he was a Kike himself. But at least he actually came out and said, you know, this is what our people are about, and I can't stand it. Yeah, he was exiled. He disappeared for almost 20 years before he came back, and then he took on Garry Kasparov, which was another great chess player, and he beat him hands down. Like, he must have still been, when he was gone for that almost 20 years, he must have been still practicing. But so, I mean, like, so it just does prove that sometimes it's not all Jews.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's the occasional one or two, but this doesn't mean that I totally trust them. So, for instance, Bobby Fischer might say on the radio that, yes, and because that's how he was fired. He was fired off the radio because he started screaming about Jews on the radio. I thought, okay, this is hard to tell because, and I was only young at the time, I thought this is hard to tell because he could be just saying it to say, oh, look, see, not all of us Jews are bad, just like this Rabbi Yaron Reuven that we were just listening to, or he could be saying it because he's authentic. Now, I happen to think that Bobby Fischer was actually authentic in his thoughts.
I do too.
Yeah, just the way he presented himself and the passion that he had and the way that he was exiled, just like that David character had the shit kicked out of him twice by his own fellow Jews because he dared to try and prove Treblinka and all of those wrong. So there is a select few here and there, but do I trust them necessarily? I'm not going to be sorting them out when push comes to shove. When the proverbial shit hits the proverbial fan, Mike, I'm not going to be lining them up and saying, are you a good Jew or a bad Jew? I'm just going to say, you're a Jew, get the fuck out of here. Get over there to the Madagascar.
Well, I'll tell you, speaking of the Bobby Fischer story, and I agree, there was actually a great movie. I'm actually a fan of chess as well. I play as well, and my dad was actually really good at it.
Searching for Bobby Fischer?
Very, very good at it. Huh?
Searching for Bobby Fischer? Is that the movie you're going to mention?
No. There was one that came out about 3 years ago, and it was not popular at all. It was one of those movies that went to the movie theater and went straight to Redbox, and it was never promoted. And I'll tell you why it wasn't promoted. Because it told the tale of how he awoke to the Jewish communist conspiracy in this movie. And it had the guy, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it had the guy that played, who was the guy that played Spider-Man, whatever? Tobey Maguire played Bobby Fischer, right?
Oh, and, Jesus Christ. How did they get Tobey Maguire? Tobey Maguire is such a fucking pussy-looking thing, Jesus.
I know. But this actually was a decent film. And it was one of those, you know, every once in a while, Jew Hollywood puts out something that's an outlier. Like you were talking about, like, you know, Bobby Fischer being an outlier himself.
Mm.
Every once in a while, you'll get a movie that goes a little bit too far than what the system wants it to go to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that movie's never promoted. It kind of just withers on the vine. It doesn't make any money. Kind of like what's happening right now to Clint Eastwood's new movie, which I've seen is a very good movie. It's the Richard Jewell story, the guy that was falsely accused of the Olympic bombing here in Atlanta during the 96 Olympics. He did a great job in this movie, and he shows how the press framed this innocent guy for a crime he didn't commit, this kind of thing, and how the press slandered somebody. And the movie is really about, and all the people in the media here were Jews. And it points it out in its own way in this movie. And so it's not getting promoted, you know, and this movie was the same way. But it was a very good movie because it went into his awakening, and his awakening to his own people being horrible was information that he got through the anti-communist movement when he was playing chess, and then he realizes all the communist leadership was Jewish, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an interesting story.
I'd like to see it. I mean, I'm not a fan of Tobey Maguire. He's like this little fucking...
He's a fag fuck.
But here's the thing, though. The story sounds like it'd be interesting indeed. One you should check out if you haven't already is the one about Josh Waitzkins that was another child, a chess prodigy, and it's called Searching for Bobby Fischer. Really good film. You know, I mean, there's some propaganda within, but it's a really good film when it comes to chess. I'm glad to know that you're a fellow chess player. I don't want to take your show up on talking about chess, but we'll have to have a game sometime. I love chess.
Absolutely. Yeah. And my son plays as well.
Oh, awesome.
And, you know, my dad, you know, that was a big deal, him being, you know, from White Russia and all, you know, it was a big deal. Chess is part of that culture like you wouldn't believe, you know?
That's where Garry Kasparov comes from.
Yeah, I was brought up in the chess kind of world, you know?
I loved it, except I kept getting my ass handed to me by this Irish dude in the chess club, and it's always the young ones that seem to beat me as well. Like, I'm a good player, and like, if I play you, you'll see how good I can be. Like, you've got to be careful with me because I'm a queen taker. But what happens is it's always the little ones that seem to, and because you know what it is with the kids, when they're playing, they are playing from a total concentration, which is we have thoughts outside of that zone. They learn like a parrot, you know? So what happens is all of a sudden I see my queen go bye-bye and I'm like, oh no, what that, like, Sean, you didn't look at that? Like, you knew that, like, yeah. You know, when they create the fork, you've got a fork where there's no way of getting out of the queen being taken because they have that fork on the king. And you're like,
Right. Oh. I mean, once you're locked in that kind of scenario, you're locked in. There's nothing you can really do to get out of
it. That's right. Yep.
But I'll tell you also, the younger players, I think, you know, they're going on their first, you know, from a psychological standpoint, especially in a game like chess, which is it's a psychological game.
It is.
More than anything.
Yep.
Okay. From a psychological standpoint, the younger kid playing, you know, against an older person, always goes with their first instinct move.
Yep.
You know, and psychologists will tell you, if you're doing like a multiple choice or a game or anything where you have to pick different options, your first choice is almost 90% the right one. And to second guess that first choice, I think as we get older, we second guess our gut instinct on what move to make, and it screws us up. We overthink it. They're not overthinking at all. They're going with that gut first choice, that first choice move, that first choice gut move on the board.
Absolutely. Yep. Couldn't have said it better myself. You know, one of the things that Bobby Fischer actually said at one stage was this. He said, one of the interviewers asked him, how do you win your game of chess? Do you think of it on a battlefield to win war, or like Napoleon did? Because Napoleon was a big chess player. And what happened? He said, do you think of it that way? And he said, no. He said, sometimes you have to think moves ahead. He said, but sometimes you just have to work on instinct and just think one move ahead. And this is why the kids do win. It's because they don't stress over it. You know, this little bloke that beat me in the chess championships, he had his teddy bear beside him, and I thought, he's not going to win, the poor little kid. He's too young. He's got a teddy bear beside him. And yeah, big underestimation that was, I tell you. I just swallowed some pride that day. What happens is he's just looking and he just went, bam. He hit the clock. Bam. I hit the clock. Bam. He hits the clock. And then all of a sudden my queen's gone. And I went, oh, fuck off. I didn't say that, of course, in front of him because he's only young. But that's what I was thinking. I was like, I'll get fucked. How did I lose my queen to a kid that's holding his teddy bear? He slaughtered me.
Sean, maybe he was a crypto Jew and the teddy bear had a tracking device and it was giving him a secret knowledge from Tel Aviv on what moves to play against you.
The teddy bear was MK Ultra, I tell you. It was. It was... It was telling him what moves to make, the bastard of a fucking stuffed toy.
Hey, but getting back to chess, I'm so glad you brought up the chess topic because this is so important. You know, we need to encourage people in white nationalism to get into chess. This is the most important brain thing they can do because this will school them. It'll get their mind ready for thinking in the future on what moves we're going to make as a movement. Not only that, but it helps your brain problem solve and be able to see. By playing chess, you can break down these crooked and deceitful enemies that we face today, because it really, you have to go underneath the surface. You have to look beyond what you just see there. Game of strategy. It's a game of risk. It's the perfect game for our movement to get into. We should promote chess in this movement more. It needs to be promoted, in my opinion, because it you know, the brain is a muscle, and this game will condition the brain to think, think like a leader, to think like someone who has vision, who can see what's going to happen to us down the road and how we can avert the problem. You know what I mean?
You've got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. It's a sort of like, as Bobby Fischer said, sometimes you've got to know when to think 10 moves ahead, and sometimes you've got to know when to just think one move ahead. And that's a decision you have to make between each move. One of the things that I think it was Kasparov that said, if you're drinking, make perfectly sure, you know, Kasparov being a Russian, he liked his vodka. If you're drinking, make perfectly sure that you keep an eye on your bishops, because your bishop is being an angle taker. The angle takers, the first things you don't recognize when you're drinking. So if you're going to be drinking, think extra hard about your bishops and your queen. Of course, your knights, it doesn't really matter that much because, you know, we've got the L shape. But the queen, it can move on angles. It can, the bishops, they move on angles. You've got your rooks that, as you and I both know, they move on your plus.
Right.
Symbol. So what happens is, I took all these hints in, but failed to take them in at the championships. I was nervous, had a drink, failed on the queen.
Yeah, but I tell you, Sean, this gets to a deeper thing. You know, it's amazing that you and I both were into the chess culture being young.
We're brothers from another mother, I fucking tell you.
But you know, what's interesting is, though, I think that game might have helped us, you know, see, you know, what was going on under the surface when it came to politics, when it came to, you know, the culture wars, all the stuff that we talk about on these shows. I really do believe, because it forces you to kind of think in a conspiratorial fashion. You know what I mean? You have to try to figure out what your opponent is doing, you know, before, you know, it's a mind fuck. It's a mind game, you know?
Yeah. No, and not just that. Like when Napoleon was playing chess, he said himself, it allows me to set my troops up in a certain fashion where I can take pieces off the board right there on the battlefield. So he would play a game of literally put his chess pieces out before a battle and work out what he had to do with his knights, his pawns, you know, the bishops, the whole lot. And it worked for him. He literally was able to slaughter many people within this war, his wars, before his douchebag took over, the other douchebag took over. But he was actually literally able to take people off the board. But not just that, as Tazarian once said in one of his books, if you don't take up a square, remember, chess is about setting traps. It's not just about taking pieces, it's about setting traps. Right. So what he said is that if you do not occupy a square, then the opponent by rights has all the means to do so. So what you've got to do is continuously set traps for the opponent. And chess really does teach you that. It teaches you how to take over your opponent. Which is what we've been doing to Rengrenade. You know, we're using, I think, like you said, because we grew up with chess, it's basically formed something in our minds where we know how to defeat the enemy, no matter who they are, whether it be Alex Jones or Rengrenade.
Absolutely. And this is something that, let me just say this, a lot of Jewish people chess is a big game in the Jewish community as well. Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
My dad used to tell me when he used to play, my dad used to live in New York when he was growing up in the Russian area, but he used to play at Central Park against a lot of Jewish players who were very, very good. I mean, that's where he used to go when he was young. He'd go to Central Park and play chess. That used to be the big thing to do in Central Park. You sit there, you find an opponent, and you'd have these fucking amazing chess matches in the middle of Central Park. It was absolutely amazing. Back in those days, you know, but we got to think they are on that level. Unfortunately, a lot of our side is not on that level. We're getting there. And that is what I think is the most important part about what you're doing here at WTFR. We want this to be the chess network of white nationalism, the chess network of fighting the enemy. We want this to be the most savvy platform that is out there moving into the future, Sean.
Absolutely, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. As I was saying earlier, you know, my next door neighbors made me laugh at one stage. Mike, just to finish up with a bit of a laugh, the next door neighbor had their nephew over. Their nephew and my son are good friends. So what happens is he came over for a sleepover with my son, and what happens is they came over the next day and said, "Oh, our nephew was actually saying that you're a chess player. You're a good chess player." And I said, "That's right." And they said, "Oh, well." Her husband at first said, Becca's husband first said, "Oh, did you want to sit down for a game of chess?" I said, "I might need both of yous." And they said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I'm a good player." As arrogant as that may sound. And they go, "Oh, okay." And they had a bit of a shit-eating grin on their face. And then what happens is I sat down and I thrashed them. And I said, looking at the pieces and everything, like, "What should we do now? What should we do now?" I would walk away from the board a bit and give them time to think and everything like that, because chess is not just on the clock. You can literally have a chess game that will last years.
Yeah. You better... You know, that is a, you know, if you're playing chess against a good opponent, you better make sure you got no plans for the fucking day. You better plan on it.
Yeah. And the one thing you got to watch out for these days, Mike, as I'm sure you'll probably now know, is that some people try and cheat by using their computer rather than, just making a move on the board. So for instance, if you and I were going to have a mail game of chess where we send each move through the mail, you and I both know we would be authentic, but if you're sending a letter through the mail to some other people, sometimes they use their computer to get the computer to work out the move.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just a dog's act, you know, but yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right.
That's another downside of technology there.
That's right.
They're fucking up our chest.
Exactly. But no, I think you're absolutely right when you say that we do need to exercise the brain, and chess is by far one of the best ways to do it. It really gets you thinking. It's a lot of people say checkers is something. Checkers, yeah, sure. You can get buggered in checkers, but it's nowhere near as psychological as chess.
Checkers. Chess players, you know, there used to be an old joke. I'm sure you've heard it back in the chess world, and it was, checkers, what's that?
Right? Yeah. You guess what? I played the captain a few times in checkers, and he's beat my ass every time. But
yeah, a lot of times a good chess player is not very good at checkers. I'm serious.
It's true. Yeah, it is true. It's a totally different thing altogether, because it's almost like that whole theory of that whole theory that we were talking about earlier, where the kid, he thinks on instinct, and mm-hmm. and then when you're playing checkers, you think more on instinct than what you do psychologically. So you're just gonna, So you're just gonna move a piece here and you're gonna move a piece there, and nor do you care as much on the checkerboard as what you do the chessboard, because every piece on the chessboard has a different meaning, which is on the checkerboard, they're all the same, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, but yeah, it's just funny that, Chinese checkers, ever played that?
Yeah. Yeah. That could even be tricky in itself. God.
Like, yeah.
Chinese checkers, where you have to move from triangle to triangle. It's like, what the? Yeah.
You know what's funny about that game? It didn't even come out of China. It was invented by a Jew in New York from Hasbro.
Oh, there we go. That would explain a lot. And it is in the shape of the Star of David.
Absolutely. It's in the shape of the Star of David. And remember, Chinese checkers used to be the number one game according to polls back in the 50s. Chinese checkers in the 60s was the number one game for people to play during the holiday season. So I could picture Jews playing Chinese checkers on the Star of David board while they eat Chinese food during Christmas, right? You know, they eat Chinese food during Christmas. So they play Chinese checkers, eat Chinese food on the Star of David board.
Yeah. 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 I know. And they're using the pins of in the Star of David to pick up their like raw fish and put it in their mouths.
Someone needs to come up with a cartoon of a couple Jews sitting around the table eating Chinese food, playing Chinese checkers, and one rabbi in the corner swinging a fucking chicken over his head.
Bucky, Bucky, Mr. Sheffield. Bok, 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 Mr. Sheffield. Seriously.
Oh, shit, it's already over?
We're
God
over.
Damn, the show went
by. Yeah.
All right, Sean. Well, this was the dreaded SS show. Sean Surplus listening to News White People Can Use. Sean's are tomorrow night right here on WTFR.
Take care, everyone.
If a racist is a person that recognizes the differences between race and then identifies the superiorities and inferiorities between those different races, then yes, I am a racist, and I wear that title proudly, and I think that you should too. There is something beautiful about being able to recognize the differences between races, but there's something even more beautiful in having the freedom to be able to notice the differences when it comes to the superiorities and the inferiorities between those races.
I was the chosen few to be born in Alabama. I'm just like my daddy's son. I'm proud of who I am. I went through a lot of good women, shook old Jim Beam's hand. If I never see the pearly gates, I've walked through the promised land. If heaven ain't a lot like Dixie, I don't want to go. If heaven ain't a lot like Dixie, I'd just as soon stay home. If they don't have a grand old Opry like they do in Tennessee, just send me to hell or New York City, it would be about the same to me.
trees and crazy leaves.